Hi, I'm Matt Lee.
And I'm Vince Mancini.
And this is Mad Yourself a Man. A Madman podcast where Vince Mancini and I go through every single episode of The Madmans
and talk about it.
Thank you so much to everyone who is listening and enjoying this season, watching along, listening along, you know, the way you're supposed to. If you are someone who listens to this podcast weekly and is like, oh man, I sure wish there was more podcast. Did you know you could go to patreon.com/frogcast and listen to a bonus episode every week?
There's more there? Oh my gosh.
Yes, it's not about Mad Men, but it is about other stuff. And
yeah, in fact, Matt was gone this week, and we were all like pretty worried about him.
Yeah,
I have a clip for you to play there, Matt.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Here, this is everyone worried about me.
Mel Ferrer.
I'm terrified of him catching balls in the face.
So it was supposed to cut off the Mel Ferrer part, but you know, we can fix that in post.
Well, listen, you're not the best at editing, but it is very good joke. Yeah. No, a lot of people are afraid, you know, they're afraid to join the Patreon, you know?
It sounds good, but it makes me very nervous.
I can understand why you would be nervous, but you should join it, patreon.com/frogcast. And also give us 5 stars in a review and stuff. Do all the things that we ask you to do every week. That you refuse to. Okay. Today, we're going to be talking about from season 3 of Mad Men, episode 4, The Arrangements. And we have a wonderful guest, a returning Pod Yourself champion. He is a political reporter for Semaphore. Ladies and gentlemen, everyone else, welcome Dave Weigel.
Hey, everybody.
What's up? How you doing?
I'm doing great. We're living through a time of changes, much like the 1960s. So I've had a lot of important thoughts before we do this recording.
Yeah, no, it's a crazy time. Just for everyone to know, we are recording this on September 11th, 2025. And obviously, there's the news we're talking about is the fact that 24 years ago, America stood still when planes crashed into the World Trade Center. That is what we're talking about. That's the news of the week. No other news has happened. No one has gotten, let's say, shot in the neck. Should I not talk about it? Why is everyone looking at me?
Yeah,
Join in on the bit.
I'm not saying anything.
All right, fine.
They're going to be looking for people. That's what
they
say.
That's true. That's true.
Looking for people making jokes, and I'm not going to make joke one. As a heart attack.
We don't talk about today's news. We talk about the news of the past. But Dave, you're a political reporter. Thank you for talking Mad Men with us. Obviously, a lot of politics happens on this show. But I want to ask you about something a little bit more important than politics, advertising. What's your favorite advertisement?
I think it's got to be the old PlayStation 2 ad, the Chris Cunningham directed, where there's just a woman being interviewed in like a deposition who has an alien face. Just the whole era of insane PlayStation ads that were like, you want to play some games? Here's the most disturbing Aphex Twin shit you've ever seen. It's like, yeah, that makes me want to play Final Fantasy VIII. Thank you.
Yeah.
But those are the ones I just, like, if ads work, they stay in your brain. And that one just never got out. It's just rattling around there for 25 years.
Interesting. I don't remember
that one either.
Yeah, specifically PlayStation 2 ads. I mean, I feel like the ads for consoles that I remember were like, it wasn't consoles, it was specific games, you know, but PlayStation 2, huh? That's I have a PlayStation 5. No big deal, but
yeah, me too.
Yeah, when are they, you're a reporter, when are they going to make games for it?
They're going to phase it out soon, aren't they? Aren't they going to do like a Generation 6 at some point?
Are you fucking kidding me?
Well, we're at this point. I got mine to play Elden Ring on it, and I beat Elden Ring. I beat the DLC, so I'm fine. I mostly use it to play Blu-rays of Criterion Collection DVDs because I'm fancy. Well, Blu-rays, I should say, because I'm actually fancier than that.
It's a really expensive Blu-ray system. I mean, you know, I need to buy some Blu-rays to make it useful. I'm just waiting until, you know, GTA, what is it, 6? When is that coming out? Doesn't matter. This is not a podcast.
Keeps getting bumped. I think it's next year. Yeah.
Fucking better be, dog.
Yeah.
This is not a podcast about GTA 6. That would be a sick one. No, this is a podcast about Mad Men. And we, of course, cannot start the podcast without first playing the theme song.
Mad yourself, man. Your mama always said you'd be there. Chose a madman. Drunk. New advertising. Podcast. Blue moon in your eyes. Mad man. Mad man. Mad.
Podcast. All right, ladies and gentlemen and everyone else, once again, talking about from season 3 of Mad Men, episode 4, The Arrangements. Vince, can you break us off a little piece of that synopsis?
Dawn has reservations about a misguided potential client who wants to sell Hialeah as the new national pastime. Meanwhile, Sal produces the patio TV commercial, Betty searches for a roommate, and Betty's father passes away.
You mean Peggy. You always confuse those two. Betty doesn't
That's
search
what
for
it's, dude, I didn't write the synopsis.
Are you telling me IMDb fucked it up?
Or Wikipedia, yeah. Peggy searches for a new roommate. Yeah, I know. I don't know why they did that.
You know what?
I'm glad that you caught that. Mr. Sharp-Eyed Copy Editor over here.
Oh, well, you know, I am someone who considers myself a bit of a scholar on the subject of Mad Men, Season 3, Episode 4, in that I watched it twice. So that is basically what happens. But more importantly, what was happening at the time that this episode came out?
That's right. It's a period piece. We need some of that period context. And we put some of that back in with a little something that we like to call the news machine.
I wipe my ass with the Wall Street Journal.
There is no big lie. There is no system. The universe is indifferent.
That's news, isn't it?
That's right. We're going all the way back to September 6th, 2009. Almost, I'm sorry, September 6th, 1963.
Right.
Almost however many years that is to the day that we're recording this. We're only 5 days off. It's kind of
That's crazy.
Kind of crazy. This was a really good news story week. Like, I had trouble just, like, you know, culling them down to 3 or 4. I couldn't help but just go with, like, the funny, silly ones this week. So this one is from the Boston Globe, 1963. Bare legs, bright garb, male street safety hope.
Man, that's a lot of words.
This was the heyday of, like, the word salad headline where you're like, what? That's,
I mean, okay. those are that's straight keywords. I feel like I'm trying to put that together. You say bare legs, Bright garb. Male.
Can't lose.
Male street.
Male street safety hope. I'll just read the story, which I'm going to be honest, it isn't that much less confusing.
It sounds like a vigilante sex worker, like gigolo, who is keeping the streets safe with his like hot legs.
Hot legs. New York. For safety's sake, men had better bare their hairy legs, wear glowing clothes, or hide behind the safe short skirts of women, at least while walking. What? That was the reaction of fashion experts today to a report by the American Automobile Association that 70% of the pedestrians hit by autos are men.
Oh,
the
damn.
AAA report pleaded with Paris fashion designers to hold the ladies' hemlines high as a traffic safety measure. Women can sprint across the highway in relative safety, says the AAA.
No, don't kill her. She's hot. Stop. Shut the car.
Such a scientific report. Because they wear short skirts. Car headlights aim downward, readily picking up their stockings or bare legs.
Well, but also, like, they're saying the headlights don't pick up jeans? Like, what are we...
Mm-hmm. Alas, the conservative garb of the walking male blends into the darkness, and most pedestrian accidents occur at night.
Oh, okay. That is kind of true. If you're, like, wearing all black and just jaywalking, you're probably going to get hit.
Yeah, that's not good. So that's that story. We're trying to keep the hemlines high to keep the traffic fatalities down.
Okay.
Obviously. This is another good one from the, also from the Boston Globe. Idol stealer busy in Boston takes a tiki.
All right. Idol stealer, huh?
Idol stealer busy in Boston, comma, takes a tiki. Some lowlife sneaked a 300-pound, 6-foot statue of a Polynesian goddess out of the South Seas restaurant while the manager's back was turned early Thursday.
How? How many pounds did you say?
300 pounds. 6-foot statue. Henry Oy of the manager described the missing lady as a tiki idol. She is the goddess of love, food, and prosperity. And how can you beat that combination? Anyway, Oy said she vanished between 12:30 and 1 a.m. from the foyer of the restaurant. She is made of Royal Hawaiian palm wood and is worth $1,500.
Jesus Christ. I'm sorry, but if you're getting a 300-pound totem pole stolen from your restaurant while your back is turned... That guy's earned it.
It's a big back. That just feels like some classic Boston shenanigans.
100%. Also, I love idol stealer, busy in Boston. It's just kind of like, oh no, he's got a collection of golden calves. He's got, this guy's got nothing but idols.
He's got a Buddha. He's got, now he's got the Polynesian goddess. It's a whole collection.
Yeah. He got one of them Easter Island heads.
Yeah, Moai. This one, this one's just an ad for Jordan's new Teen Man Shop. Fashions tailored to fit, quote, the student body. Now Jordan's grows with you. Our new Teen Man Shop for the fashion-minded high school man has been created expressly for this purpose.
Teen Man?
Teen Man. Teen Man Shop.
Okay.
No more sized up boys' clothes, nor sized down men's clothes, but a new, fresh styling that our young crowd will eagerly accept as crowd pleasers.
Wow.
Youthful exuberance calls for similar attire. This is exactly what you will find in our many well-stocked displays of the latest fall styles, fabrics, and colors.
No more stretching out baby clothes and no more shrinking giant man clothes. No, we've decided to sew whole new items of clothing for teens who are somewhere in between.
Somewhere in between a man and a boy.
Yeah, a man boy.
I believe Alice Cooper wrote about this.
Yes, I believe so.
Okay, so here's two more like slightly interesting ones. Okay. This one is a headline from also from the Boston Globe. Apparently, this person is just known by one name. Headline: Christine seized on perjury counts.
Just Christine, huh?
Mm-hmm. Christine Keeler.
Is it a car? Oh, okay.
No. Central figure in Britain's scandal of the century. Spent the night in jail and then made bond today on charges that she lied at the trial of a discarded Jamaican lover.
Man, this is great.
The 21-year-old playgirl stood pale but composed as she stood in court with three other defendants, two friends.
Hold on. This is like 1963, right?
Yeah.
Playgirl. They had playgirls.
Yeah. Well.
She's high society, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is she an heiress or some shit? I feel like
she's had an affair with the prime minister, but I was gonna get to that, it sounds like.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Winston Churchill?
who once before disappeared in a court case, heard the court set her bond at a relatively whopping £3,000. Christine was hit with four charges of perjury and conspiracy to obstruct justice in the case of Aloysius Lucky Gordon, her ex-lover. A jazz singer, he got a 3-year sentence June 4th on a charge of beating her up outside a West End flat. Gordon... blah, 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 blah. This year, Ms. Keeler has been involved in one headline affair after another. In March, she was the missing witness in the trial of another Jamaican, 34-year-old John Edgecombe. In June, War Minister John Profumo's disclosure of an affair with her brought him down in disgrace and rocked Prime Minister Macmillan's government. In July, she became the key witness in the vice trial of Dr. Stephen Ward, society osteopath.
Yo, Ward, who is this psychopath?
Ward subsequently took a lethal dose of barbiturates.
Wait, okay. So just so I'm clear from what you're saying, this lady, Christine Keeler, had an affair with the prime minister, put a Jamaican jazz singer like in jail for 3 years.
For beating her up, yeah.
Right. But it sounds like that didn't... Did this happen or did this not happen?
Did which part not happen?
Well, which is the perjury?
The affair happened. It was the defense minister, prime minister. Everyone was angry with because he let it happen.
Oh, okay.
No, it definitely happened.
Well, but the Aloysius thing, like,
I think she lied to protect this Jamaican guy that beat her up, who was the jazz singer that she was involved with. And then before that, she brought down a prime minister by having an affair with him. And then
she killed the doctor.
And she killed the doctor. Yeah. She's the Ghislaine Maxwell of her day, it sounds like.
Yo, that's crazy. Wow.
Yeah.
You know what? Lean in. That's what I say.
Mm-hmm.
That's some girl boss stuff.
Last one. This one actually was like, this was more interesting, but I never heard this story before. Miami Herald. Russians wanted to give in. Red China charged Thursday that the Soviet Union was ready to compromise with Hungary's rebels in 1956, but yielded to Chinese insistence that the rebellion be put down severely. The official communist Chinese news agency said this assertion was made in an article published joint blah blah blah. The news agency said the lengthy first article of the two series. Okay, don't stop telling me where it's published. China's announcement of the latest in its series of vitriolic attacks on the Soviet Union followed reports in Europe that China may be planning to set up its own branch of the Communist International.
Sick.
Yeah. Yeah. So I guess the Chinese are saying the Russians were trying to pussy out, and they were like, nah, dude.
Oh. So that's crazy, though.
Yeah, I guess this is like Khrushchev time, and they were like, okay, this guy's not...
this guy's kind of a bitch. He's backing down on missiles and stuff.
Enough. Yeah.
Yeah, and then they were like, they out-communist them.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Sorry, I shouldn't have ended with that one.
Yeah, how about end with the, you know, turtle wanders into Alaskan net. How about that
one? You want that one?
Yeah.
That's a good story. Cordova, Alaska. Two fishermen caught the biggest, ugliest, and so far as is known, the only sea turtle ever landed in Alaskan waters Thursday. The turtle weighed 600 pounds.
Damn.
The fishermen, Dean Kramer and Glenn Lankert of Cordova, were netting for silver salmon near the Copper River Flats, about 20 miles west of Cordova, when the turtle became fouled in their net.
Damn. Yeah. Do they eat the turtle or let it go? That's the question.
I mean, it's 1963. I don't think.
Yeah, they ate the turtle and set something racist to it, probably.
They probably like cut out the meat and discarded shellacked the shell.
Yeah, exactly. And just sled. They turned it into a sled and they go down the hill. These guys were, you know, the 60s, everyone was kind of a psychopath. Well, you know what, Vince? That's all very important context to understand this episode of Mad Men.
Yes.
Now, with that context, we can fully understand what had happened in the show. But of course, you need one more bit of context, and that's a little bit of a Draper D story, based on the Drifter song on Broadway. Here is a little bit of that for all of you idiots who demand this shit. They say that Sal's wife bought some new lingerie. She got dolled up and did her hair. But Sal's gay. But when she's trying to touch his meat, he does Anne Margaret's choreography.
All right.
And Kitty wakes right up, and now she's scared. Yeah, and then it's all the other, you know, it's all the other storylines. You can listen to that at the end of the pod, as I know you do often and love.
How'd you get that whole chorus, like that whole backing band, that whole choir?
It's called GarageBand. Mm-hmm. Multi-tracking and doing a little bit of reverb. Matt Lieb can do pretty much anything he sets his mind to. Let's talk about this fantastic episode of Mad Men. Vince, what are your general thoughts on this one?
You say general thoughts. I say a blurb that I wrote, which I will now read. This is another great episode in one of the best runs of the show, where Don is increasingly disillusioned with the whole capitalism thing. Mm-hmm. He proves that you could lie your way to the top and succeed through your own guile, but at the end of the day, you're still grifting fail sons. Way more lucrative than doing good work, which, you know, is a little disappointing if you like doing good work. He's starting to feel more like an unwilling passenger in the story rather than the guy steering the ship. You know, he's the seducer. He likes to sell and seduce, and when dumb money like the Hialeah child just falls in your lap, he's not that interested.
Yeah, yeah.
Elsewhere, Peggy still can't relate to other women. Sal is still gay. But mostly, this episode is a weird requiem for Betty's dad, Gene, who isn't really that important a character in the grand scheme of things, but I do really enjoy watching him, especially so since the writer seemed to forget that he was supposed to have dementia.
Yeah, they did, didn't they? There was a few parts where I was like, oh, is this a little hint of his dementia?
Nah.
Nope. He's just, they just were like, no, he's going to die of something else.
Yeah. I mean, the bigger idea seems to be that Gene is a means to show someone who actually cares about Sally and for Sally to see what genuine, like non-distracted love actually looks
like,
just in time for you to get pulled away. And it's always tough for me to watch child actors have to pull off that nuanced of character arcs, but I still appreciate the story a lot, and it was a very memorable episode for me.
Yeah, and I honestly do think she does a pretty good job for a child actor.
Sure. Yeah, it's always they did great for a child.
Right. Like, right. Exactly. Dave, this, you had mentioned before that this was an episode that you had somehow missed during its original run, and you like got caught up to it. So people, you know, when you watch this one, you realize, oh, I've actually never seen this one. What did you think about this particular episode?
Yeah, I try to avoid portrayals of deviant lifestyles on TV just for moral reasons. So
yeah, for God reasons.
I think it was honestly a period when I was kind of manic and driving around the country and missed it. But I knew everything that happened in it. Mm-hmm. The thing that stood out was the Sal dance sequence, right? Mm-hmm. Yes. That's great. I had forgotten that he doesn't get run out of the company until a later episode. You don't care about spoilers, right?
No, we don't care. Very old show.
I forgot about that. But I forgot about that. That's still a lot of interesting stuff is happening. I'm also a big fan of scenes where a father-in-law is undermining his son-in-law. There's a great one in Brokeback Mountain. Remember when the dad's going and turning on the football and Jake Gyllenhaal says, "Hey, I'm gay and you can't do that."
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But
that famous line.
but that whole stuff with the father.
Yeah, trying to get the bloody helmet. Yeah.
I'd forgotten what the theme was, and I was trying to wrestle how Sal fits in that theme if I was a TV recapper, because it's the most interesting plot here, but it's the only one that's not about parents wrestling with their kids or vice versa.
Right.
What did you guys think was the reason? I totally didn't watch originally and didn't realize what happened to the ad. Why didn't the diet soda people like the ad? Because the only reason we hear is it's not Anne Margaret. But are we meant to believe something? There was something secretly gay in the ad that they picked up on, or what?
To me, this feels like a classic comment on like studio notes, or just like, you know, you can give the client exactly what they want, but like your job is to surprise them in some way. And I think it's just a fancy way of saying the client is stupid and you should never listen to them. Like, don't listen to the fans, because the fans are hogs.
Yeah. And it's also, I think, doing a little bit of it is vindication for Peggy, because Peggy spends the first, a couple of episodes in which this idea is mentioned. She is sort of arguing with not just the writers, the other like creatives, but also with like Dawn about how, you know, I'm the only woman on this creative team. And I'm telling you that this is like stupid. This is a bad idea and it's not going to work. And also the name of the soda sucks. And so, you know, Dawn in those moments is just like, you know, Peggy, you're not an artist. Just, you know, make the client happy. And I think this mostly serves to vindicate the fact Peggy is right about some things.
I think the connection is that Dawn had an inkling of, like, Dawn said, oh, our job is just to make the client happy in that episode. And this episode is showing him, like, why you don't want to do that, like why the like the how that's going to backfire on you, like there's
okay
that. And I also think,
I was trying to read deeper into it, this is interesting.
And I also think that they're sort of doing this thing where like people liked the Bye Bye Birdie and Margaret thing because it had like a sense of newness and it was like a spontaneous thing, and like the idea here is them trying to like meticulously recreate something spontaneous, which obviously like you can't do. Like the magic was in it being doing it just because, and you kind of kill that when you're like, oh, let's just do a thing that worked in the past.
I also
get it. Yeah.
There's just one more thing, which is I think that it's also a statement on how, as much as in theory it sounds like a good idea, doing a full length parody song of something is actually really stupid and no one actually likes it, which is a weird statement to make because we all know that's not true. In fact, people like it when a parody song goes on very long and you do the whole thing instead of just a segment of it. So I think everyone knows that. We're all in agreement with that?
Yes, we're at yes, yes, yes.
Thank you. We're at yes, yes, yes.
I think there was also a troll there. We're like, hey, how can we make him listen to this dog shit off-key song yet again?
Yeah, over and over. It was just hating.
Yeah, because it's more off-key than the actual Anne Margaret song.
Yeah.
That struck me. I was watching the guy. I was like, well, they nailed it. And there's in the year we're living in the future, there are all these ads that are we got some celebrities who used to make a show to make a shittier version of the show for the ad.
Yeah,
like that was used to that. But it was just really clangy and annoying.
Yeah, yeah. In 2025 it would have been Anne Margaret.
Yeah. They would have gotten
I really need this money.
Buy
diet soda.
Yeah.
Or it's so weird.
She'd be buy fiat currency. Time to buy some crypto coin. Like that's what it would have been and would have been fucking awful. And
now, I feel like we need a congressional amendment to ban like Brian Cox from doing fucking like McDonald's voiceovers.
Why does he have to do that?
Like, come on,
why does
man.
He have to?
Like you're stealing a job from like some poor schmuck that only can do McDonald's commercials. Meanwhile, like you're cheapening your own gravitas by telling me about Big Macs.
I'm here for this debate because there used to be a whole subcategory of actors who just did this stuff. The the In a World voiceover guys for trailers,
right?
Yeah. And the guys, the professional animation pros, and then they all got replaced by celebrities. It's awful.
It sucks.
Yeah, who's going to be our next like Billy West or Mel Blanc? It's like who knows? We have fucking Zac Efron for that now.
Yeah, like there's a reason people like Maurice LaMarche exist, and it's because they can do multiple voices. You know, we gotta stop giving it to fucking Dakota Fanning. Fuck off! You're not Stitch. Some guy I've never heard of is Stitch. Yeah,
that should be Hank Azaria doing an Indian accent for some reason.
Yeah, it should be Hank Azaria doing something racist. I just generally with this episode, obviously the standout is, like you said, it is the Sal dancing episode. And
see, I don't know. For me, it's all it's a Gene episode.
No,
me,
I love Gene.
The Sal thing too.
But I think about this scene a lot. This one scene in this episode in which Sal is, you know, having his super hot wife come on to him wearing this like lingerie and got her hair dolled up. She looking good. And he's like, I'm sorry, I've just been really busy working on musical theater for my job. And the scene in which he explains what the commercial is, and you watch as her face slowly comes to the like mortified realization that, oh, he's gay. This is what this is.
It's just crazy. Like, how did she not realize before then?
It's a good question. I think she's known him since they were kids. They were like childhood sweethearts. They grew up in the same neighborhood. She's always been in love with him. So she has nothing but blinders on for this guy. And I think like watching him, I don't know, do a musical theater thing. I don't know. I think that can... That might make something tick or something.
I think there's like a 60s pop culture thing where like there's a lot of these like, you know, lifelong bachelors as heartthrobs. And I feel like maybe pop culture has been sort of feeding the idea that like the sexiest, coolest, most unattainable hot guy that you can ever want is actually like a gay man, but they never say that he's a gay man. So you just grow up thinking like, oh, that guy's just really cool.
He's just a confirmed bachelor. Yeah, that idea is always, I've always thought that was really funny because I've never known what the confirmed part meant.
Like, oh, okay, that is enlightening. Yeah,
who confirms it? You know what I mean? And is it like them where they're just like, they put a sign in the front of their apartment, no girls allowed? I don't understand it. But I do love that scene and I do want to play it because it's just great hearing Sal explain it. It's great.
It's the beginning of Bye Bye Birdie.
Oh, I'm trying to remember.
She starts singing against a blue background. She walks towards you. The wind is blowing in her hair. And she sings about how patio is low in calories. And then she extends her hand out. And she waves goodbye. But she stops. And she takes her dress in her hands. And she runs forward as fast as she can. But then she turns her back. And looks seductively over her shoulder. Pushes her shoulders together and leans over with the can. And she smiles. Hello, patio. Something like that. Sound good?
You're gonna do great.
Really think so?
Yes.
It's like so heartbreaking and hilarious because you just realize that she's, you know, it's like, what do you do in that situation? You're her and you've just now realized the man you've always loved is like, oh, he's very gay. That's what this whole thing is. It's like the missing piece of the puzzle for her. But also, you know, come on, just look
I
at
would
him.
Have thought she would have had inklings earlier, but I do understand that, like, this is
I do think it's an Italian thing. It's an Italian thing. I think this is the thing about being Italian is there's a lot of things that you
Please
can just
explain
say
explain it to me, Matt.
I'll explain it. It is, you can just say, oh, I'm just Italian for pretty much anything. Just like, oh, he sure does love his mother a lot. Oh, hey, I'm just Italian, I love my mom. You know, oh man, he sure likes to dance. I'm a romantic, I dance, I play. You know, it's all
the Andrew Cuomo thing.
Yes.
Thing. Like, I'm not perverted, I'm just Italian.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
That's his official line. Yeah.
Yes, like, so, you know, I think in this case she was like, oh, he's not gay, he's just Italian. And then, you know, at that moment she was like, oh, it's both. So so that's, yeah, it's a great storyline, but in general this episode isn't about that. You're right, this episode is about Gene. It's the, you know, the last we see of Grandpa Gene.
I love Gene so much. I don't know.
Yeah.
I do. Do you not love Gene?
No, I love him. I just, he's one of those characters for me that, I think you said this earlier, but it doesn't mean much in like the grand scheme of the show other than like being, I don't know, the last vestige of Betty, like Betty needing someone to impress or someone to, you know, someone who like makes her feel like she's still a whatever. What's their last name?
The Hofstadt.
Hofstadt.
If I had to like force a like close reading or a metaphor out of this,
sure.
I think sort of Gene represents the idea of, you know, like part of the theme of the show was this is America. Just figure out who does the job you want and become them. You know,
right?
Like, Gene sort of represents the generation of people that Don tried to become. Like, he's kind of like one of the guys that Don was trying to become, and so now he's seeing that the end result of that is still that he's going to be he's turning into a source of pity
Yeah.
He's not like them, but you're not going to be the master of the universe forever. Like, you're just going to eventually become like a burden and a source of pity to your family.
At some point you're going to be old and you're going to, you know, have a stroke, and that's just life. Speaking of which, what's up with Trump's face? Did he have a stroke? Did you guys see the pictures?
He seems like he's trying to do that Denzel Washington face impression. Like, he's trying to do that thing that Denzel Washington does with his...
you mean where... You think that's what it is? You think he's channeling...
He saw highest to lowest.
He's channeling his inner Denzel.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. I mean, I was looking at him and I was like, man, that kind of looked like he had a stroke. But of course, you know, what am I going to do? Sit here hoping for something, knowing that he's probably healthier than I am and will live longer. Anyways, yeah, the Gene stuff is great. I love Peggy in this episode.
Really?
Yeah, because we
to me, that's the storyline in this episode that like does the least for me.
I love it because I love how awful her mom is, mm-hmm. And how she does not. She's a copywriter, yet she doesn't know how to write an ad that will attract a peer, you know, like another single lady who wants to live in the city. Like her inability to, I don't know, speak to her own demographic, I thought was really funny. But mostly I just loved the fact that her mom, is god awful to her when she's like, I need to move.
Well, I think she doesn't have peers. Like she's trying to attract, like, she wants to be one of the boys and be like she wants to be an admin. Mm. And like most of the women, single women that are coming to the city seem like they're more of the Joan type where they're going right there to sort of meet a husband. And that's not really Peggy's deal.
Right. Yeah. No, true. But also, you know, the fact that Joan has to be like, well, if you want to make friends with a woman, the first thing you do is not suck. Like, that's very funny. She just doesn't know how to do that. But yeah, if we're going through it storyline by storyline, I'm just going to start with Peggy because we can get it out of the way. We start off with, first the show opens with Gene is teaching Sally to drive and Bobby is in the back with no seatbelt. I love driving scenes in the show because of lack of safety, anything. It's always just like a kid just sitting in the well, eating an English muffin, like sitting in the footwell and a 12-year-old driving, can barely see over the steering wheel. Old man laughing, looking at roofs, going like, that one's going to cave in. So a lot of fun watching that opening. And then we have Peggy. She's at her sister's house where her mom, I guess, is currently living. And her mom is trying to watch the news because she wants more news of the Pope being dead, which anytime they allude to how Catholic her mom is, it makes me laugh. She explains to her sister that I need to move to Manhattan. And the reason is because it's a 2-hour commute. But the way she mentions it's a 2-hour commute, she says, that's 2 hours every day. And altogether, that's a week of work every month. She wants the extra time so she can work more.
Yeah.
And her sister's like, wow, I never thought of it.
Guy.
Yeah, 100%. She's on her grind set. She's just like, you know, she's like that guy that keeps going viral, who keeps talking about how he has 3 days in one day. Mm-hmm. It's like from 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. That's when I carbo load. From 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. That's when I write novel. From 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. That's when I do
leg day. So Peggy's family is super Catholic, but also Norwegian, which I found sort of confusing. I don't know if
I don't know what that was about.
That's kind of rare. Yeah. Which it seemed like it was more important for her to have a Norwegian roommate than a Catholic one, too, right? So they're definitely like race essentialists in this household.
Right. It is strange. Yeah. I can only imagine that her mom is not Norwegian. It's that her dad was Norwegian, and because the mom very much seems like an Irish Catholic. I mean, right?
That's what I was getting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it doesn't really matter.
You don't hear a lot about that Norwegian guilt.
Yeah, you don't, exactly. Although, if you talk to the Swedes, I bet they'll... What is the deal with that? In this, there's a funny scene where she's like talking, looking for a roommate. She finds this woman who's just like, you know, are you Swedish? And she goes, I'm Norwegian. And then she goes, oh, well, we won't tell my mom. Do anyone know any history that would suggest why the Swedes hate each other?
More cosmopolitan, and the Norwegians live up there in the mountains. And I feel like the Norwegians are kind of like the hillbillies to the Swedes.
Right. But did they ever have wars?
Who could say?
They did a long time. I think this, like, during Napoleonic War, so it wasn't one of the, like, the interesting ones, but they definitely fought. Like, there was a period where Sweden had a giant empire and took over part of it. I don't know a lot of people have that grudge anymore, but but if you want to.
Usually
it's like one of those things where you'll meet, like, a Hungarian who really dislikes Czechs, and, like, why do you care?
Well, usually it's the Danes and the Finns, I think, are more resentful than the Norwegians, but I'm not sure.
It's all confusing to me.
The Norwegians and the Swedes are the two, you know, they're the two most powerful of the Scandinavian bloc countries, I think.
They all sound the same to me. Hershey, Bergy, Dergy. You know, big deal.
That is what they say.
But then the Finns kind of resent the Swedes. But then they end up liking them because they hate the Russians more than they hate the Swedes. So they're sort of, it's a whole different thing.
They got their own stuff
going on. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, thank you. Give me some room here. My name is Greta Thunberg. That's what she, you know, she's always saying her name. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like we said, Joan puts
she's
up.
She's always saying her name in the first line of her rap.
Yeah. Yo, what up, bitch? It's me, Greta Thunberg. Peggy needs a new roommate, puts up an ad. The Lois Sadler, who's like the funniest secretary, does a prank phone call in which, you know, all of the boys are razzing her because she, you know, wants to move to the city, and she fucked up. She shouldn't have put that in the office.
I thought this was a fun scene for multiple reasons. I mean, one, it's funny, and two, I think it's the first successful bit of copywriting that Paul Kinsey has done in the show.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
It's just this prank.
Yeah, it's finally someone's going to read something that he wrote. But it's a great prank. Joan helps her out and says, like, hey, you need to get this, written better so you can get a cool roommate. And she gets, like, the ultimate, like, it's almost a little too on the nose. Karen Erickson, who is just like, I don't really get along with women. Like, it's like, I just like boys. Like, they wrote her as cool girl, which is very funny. And then finally, Peggy buys her mom a new TV in order to break the news to her.
A new TV?
She made a new TV. And to break the news to her that she is moving out to Manhattan. And her mom is so over the top mad that I just found myself cackling throughout this entire scene. Like, I knew she was going to be mad, but I guess I didn't fully understand how mad.
Ma, I'm getting an apartment in Manhattan.
Well, that makes sense.
It really does.
Yeah, I guess I'm the kind of mother who'd rather have a new TV than a daughter.
I got you a new TV because you needed one.
You got me a new TV because you think I was born yesterday. You belong in the city. I'll take it back, okay? Because it's just going to remind me of how stupid you think I am.
Ma, you knew she'd have to move there eventually.
You'll get raped, you know that.
Jesus Christ!
That wasn't so bad.
Settle down, really? Mel Gibson.
She's been through a lot of change lately. The Holy Father dying, that was very hard on her.
I love how many times they blame it on the fact that the Pope died. It's like, remember, you know how she gets when popes die? She has a full-on Mel Gibson moment talking about getting R'd in the city. For me, one of my favorite storylines. And more importantly, I think we need to talk about the Hialeah storyline. What the fuck is Hialeah? What is this sport?
It's Polish handball, according to Horst Sr.
Did you do any research on this? Because, like, I was looking it up.
I remember reading about Hialeah in, like, a encyclopedia when I was young and, like, being like, oh, this sounds cool. And now I'm wondering if this, like, that was part of the advertising push that some sort of Hialeah child did in the 60s, that they managed to get, like, an oversized entry about it in some sort of encyclopedia that I got a hold of as a child.
Yeah, it's a super weird thing to be into in the 60s. I was poking around too because I wonder if there was some fad they're writing off, but it really is the odd. If he was into soccer, would make sense. Obviously, all that now we love soccer. But the highlight thing was it was sort of a craze in the early 1900s, and then not again at all.
Yeah, it is like I hadn't, you know, I only know it from the show, and I was looking it up, and it seems like there was in Miami. There was like a slight highlight craze that happened, and I was I decided to, you know, go on YouTube to like watch what it looks like, and there are people playing it. You can find videos of it, and I tell you right now, I can't imagine a more boring sport. Like it is,
ball go fast though.
Ball goes so fast you can't see ball. Most exciting part about it is maybe someone will lose an eye. It seems incredibly dangerous, and mostly it just seems like a really funny idea for a sport that doesn't work. And I love the way it's like being sold by this guy who is like the ultimate fail son, Horace. What is his last
Horst.
Name? Horst. Horst.
Ho ho.
Yes. Ho ho. Horst Cook Jr. He's a blue-blooded chum of Pete. They both went to Dartmouth together, where Pete, quote, kept him away from the Shylocks, which that just sounds fun.
Dartmouth, famous Shylock haven.
Yeah.
No, but I wondered about his styling. Like, the asshole rich guy has been depicted as wearing an ascot in so many different movies and shows, and I always wonder, like, how, like, was there that many people that were rocking ascots that it became this entire styling character trend in so many movies?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it seems like I always find it weird when it's like, well, anyone can just get an ascot, you know. Like, then you can pretend to be rich.
It does seem like more functional in a way, where you got your tie, but it's tucked inside your neck and it's not dangling in your food.
Yeah. I always think a bolo tie is the most functional tie.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Could stop a bullet just in case.
Right.
And that, I think ascot's always been a fancy boy, I'm a fancy rich boy thing. I've never seen it outside that context. So I do like how he's styled, because he's not an obvious crank,
right?
He just takes himself super seriously and dresses a little bit, you see this in the dinner conversation, where he assumes once this he mints the highlight coin, then more people are going to want to invest in him,
right?
He's, yeah, he's dressing for success already.
That's funny. You got, yeah, I got crypto guy too. Like, very much got like, oh, this is a proto tech guy who just comes up with an idea that is completely outlandish but is dead set on making it happen somehow,
right? Because he's got the money, he has an endless supply of money from his trust fund, and he's like, I mean, he literally talks about how he was looking for boxers and then he saw Patchy who was this hot, the Babe Ruth of highlight. And he immediately changed from being a guy who was, I guess, going to be a boxing promoter or something, which is also another like rich guy thing. It's all very AJ Soprano wanting to be a, what did he want to be again? An event planner.
Event planner. He was going to go to college for event planning. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like he wanted to be a boxing promoter, and then he saw like a hotter guy doing a different thing, and he said,
"No, hot this Latin is- guy." Yeah. He gives like a vaguely gay sort of vibe too. Like maybe he just saw like a hot Latin guy.
That's good. Maybe that's part of the father's disappointment. I didn't even clock how that connected. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. To me, like the way in which his father talks about him as a disappointment is so much so that I can only imagine it's because he knows that his son is maybe gay or something.
Yeah. Or just, I think you get the sense that he went off to some yachting vacation where he saw Hialeah, and like his idea of, like, this is the era when youth culture was sort of taking over. And so like his his version of youth culture is like, you know, you go yacht around Europe and you fall in love with a hot highlight guy.
Yeah.
If we could only just bring that feeling back to America.
Yeah. How can I sell this love to the masses? And it's like, well, okay, first, we have to take over all three networks like we're the president. Yeah. And then we have to take our hottest highlight player and do what with him? No, not show him playing highlight. Show him as a secret agent who is like banging world, broads. Banging babes.
It's sort of like polo. Like, have you ever read about polo? Like, it's basically a sport that you can only play if you own like 100 horses.
You need more than one horse to play it?
Yeah, you need like 10 horses to play polo. So you have to show up with like, and so like, you imagine the logistics it would take to travel from one polo ground to another where you're like, yes, I had to take, you know, my 15 best horses from Florida to like Switzerland or whatever, or Argentina. Like, just, yeah, like, it's, you crazy. Cannot play the sport unless you are a multi-millionaire.
That's totally nuts. I always, like, that many horses, whenever I think of more than one horse, someone who's got like, you know, I got like 12 horses, I immediately think of every song that is written in Mongolian throat singing. They're all songs about like, I have a horse, I have 12 horses, here's a field.
That's like their rap where they're just like, they got the grill.
100% like though, like, yeah. Ancient songs that would be like, I got fucking 12 horses in my stable. And it's sick, but it's,
well,
weird.
Not only do you have to have like 10 horses to play a polo match, like, I think the thing is that like most horses can't play polo. Like, it takes a very specific kind of horse to like go against its natural instincts to, you know, to like
to live,
move away from contact.
Oh, sure, not, sure, sure.
And so like, you have to have 10 horses to have one that might be able to play polo, and then from that you need like 10 just to play a match. So it's, yeah, it's a whole thing.
That's crazy.
Anyway, this isn't about polo, but it reminded me of that.
I mean, oh shit. What's up,
hey,
dude?
It's me. Hey. Hey, I need to take a break because there's a Hyalai match I really want to watch. So can we stop for ads now?
All right. He's right.
Oh, is that now? Oh, it's a time zone change. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's
exactly.
It's on my calendar. Okay.
Okay. So yeah,
you're TiVoing that.
Right. Yeah. We all got to take a break to cover the Hyalai match. So please stick around. Maybe get a few more horses in your herd. Try to keep up with those Tuvins. And we'll be right back.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
And we're back. This is Mad Yourself Man here with Dave Weigel. How you doing, Dave?
I'm doing great.
Hell yeah.
I'm just catching up on the highlight scores. It looks like the Basque Bombers are up by 7 runs.
Ooh, they got runs. Yeah. That's beautiful. looking at the...
Everyone's in the crowd eating pinchos.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I got hit by the pelota inside of the... What's the name of the stadium that it's called?
Fronton.
Oh, yeah.
Fronton.
Yeah, Fronton. I love it. They're going to look at the highlight reels. Thank you, highlight reels.
Okay.
So yeah, the interesting thing about this,
the human highlight reel.
Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, patchy.
Patchy human highlight reel. What's interesting about this is not necessarily, you know, the funniness of highlight, but it's the fact that he is this rich guy who is being, I mean, he's just being took.
And, well, he's and like, not, I want to give you lots of my money.
Right.
He's like, Ron is the only one that's like, there's something unseemly about this. I don't like it when the woman wants it too much.
Right. 100%. Don is grossed out by it. And he pretends it's because, well, listen, Bert has a relationship with the father. And this is not going to, you know, Bert's not going to like this or whatever. But it's not that at all. It's that he doesn't like watching a feeding frenzy, and he like he describes it in this really funny way where he likens it to living during the fucking the Depression, and he has this great scene right outside of the meeting.
During the Depression, I saw somebody throw a loaf of bread off the back of a truck. It was more dignified.
Well, as the Bible says, enjoy your fatted calf.
Campbell, did you tell him who this idiot's father is?
He said he's a shipping magnate, not a client.
Horace Sr. is connected to Bert Cooper in a million ways, and I don't know if he would like what just happened in there.
You want to run it by his daddy? He's my age, so he was born with a lot of money. He has a dream, and it's our job to make it come true.
First of all, I don't know enough of the Bible to know what the fatted calf is about, but I do love the idea that there's a passage in the Bible that's just like, God will sometimes bless you with a slow fat calf that you can just eat like various piranha. Mm-hmm.
I think that, I mean, it's hard to figure out at first why Don is so reticent, but I think the idea is that like Don likes making sexy ads and convincing people of things, and he knows that none of this is about making a sexy ad. Like I feel like he can only envision an ad that's going to embarrass him.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think it's also he likes the chase. Everything with him is the chase. Yeah. And I think he's grossed out by the fact that everyone is like so willingly I mean, he grew up in a whorehouse. His words, you know, so like for him, I think there is something there's something grotesque about like the way that men will line up to all have sex with the same person. It's like he's watching some sort of like, I don't know, Bukkake, and this guy just really wants, you know, Patchy to be famous because he's hot. While that is also interesting, I also like the way in which it ties in with the family dynamic. You see the way in which Horace Jr. really wants his father's respect, and Don almost has this moment where like he like at some point goes and he looks at a picture of like the family, the guys who raised him, the, you know, I think it's his uncle or whatever. And he's like staring at it in this way.
His uncle. What is it with you and uncles? Isn't that his dad and his stepmom?
Is that his dad?
I thought so.
I thought he was raised by like an uncle or something.
Well, he was.
I don't know.
Dad and his mom. His dad had. His mom was the whore, and then he went to live with his dad and his dad's wife.
Right. But. Then at some point he's living in a, it doesn't matter. The point is that I'm definitely right. So I don't know. I saw him looking at it like not knowing the feeling of having an elder to respect. am I wrong in that? I mean, I'm trying to like understand the significance of him waking up to go look at that picture in the middle of the night. You know, I mean, I can understand how it ties in with Betty, who has, you know, Grandpa Gene being, you know, someone that she's always, of course, looked up to and always saw as is like basically a god to her, and doesn't like him being mortal.
I think he doesn't respect anyone who's just born into high society because he had to, you know, fight so hard and like steal another person's identity and then reinvent his whole deal just to get there, and then he's seeing people born into it that are like, you know, they're just there to waste his their dad's money.
It's classic Pete not knowing how to make that sale, because he outwardly saying I'm a fancy boy, and I met him at fancy boy school here, and we can take his money. That's not how you're gonna get not just the chase, but it's a career of Don not respecting those people.
Like, right. Pete sort of shames Don's career because Don, you know, Don thinks it's all about like, you know, seducing these people and having the sexiest ad. And Pete's just like, well, I know a guy from prep school and we can rob him blind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is kind of crazy that he's like telling Don to his face, like, hey, come on, I spent years making sure that no Jews got into his pockets just so I could lay the groundwork for me getting into his pockets one day. Like, it's like the most sociopathic thing where he's like, let me enjoy my payday. It's so, is he's been working on this one guy for that long. But yeah, he's like, Don has like no one to impress, but like, I guess the clients for him, every client is a potential dad to impress maybe. And what he longs for is not what everyone else longs for, which is I wish my dad respected me and loved me. I think for him, it's just like, I wish I could fuck every girl. That's and I wish my dad would fuck me. I don't know. We got to get like a psychologist on here.
Yeah.
If you guys know any psychologists, broadcast@gmail.com. But yeah, they all celebrate because, you know, try as he might, Don was not able to stop High Life from going forward. The moment he does try, where he's just like, this is a terrible idea, you shouldn't do this. He just goes, I see what you're doing. This is a tactic to get my business. Oh, all of it reminds me of the time that I bought the wrong wedding ring.
How so, Matt?
Well, I feel like I went into this situation very similar to this Horst Jr., where I like went to a jeweler and I was just like, I have $6,000, sir. What can I get? And like, I think if you show up telling them how much money you have, they're going to take all of the money.
They generally frown upon that in the business art of the deal school.
Yes, yes. So I had not read that wonderful book yet. So, instead I got a ring you couldn't return. I've talked about the ring and then I had to get another better ring. And I still have the old ring. I still have it. Dave, if there's ever a time
that
where
you can pass that down to your grandkids.
Yeah, if I ever have Armenian grandma for a grandkid, then I'm sure they will love it.
Wait, if there's ever a time where
where you need sort of like a ring that has it's like a gold band, but like a really big blue topaz in the middle, like really big, like too big.
Sure.
I'll give you a discount, $5,000.
That's pretty good. That's how can you say no to that? That's $1,000 off. So you're basically making money from
me. Yeah, at this point you're stealing from me, bro.
The way you should do business is, this is what Trump used to do, was like someone would quote him a price and he would just always offer them half of whatever price they quoted him, and so like and that would make him think that he was doing good business, so everybody sort of figured out and just would quote him double, and then he would say, I'll give you half, and they'd be like, all right, sold, and then they would both walk away thinking they got a really good deal.
Smiling, and everybody wins.
I
wonder if he had a stroke. So finally, speaking of strokes, we're going to talk about Gene. The Gene stuff is really great. I feel like Sally, maybe now I'm a girl dad, watching like a grandfather, you know, granddaughter relationship makes me like 1,000 times more emotional. So like, I really enjoyed watching them,
because no one is ever sweet to Sally on the show.
She's very like, you know, seen, not heard. Like that's what Betty has been trying to instill in her from like episode one. Is just like, why are you talking? just be there and look cute and stop getting fat. And like someone is like eating ice cream with her and not judging her. Someone is like letting her do something dangerous, like drive a car. You know, it's like someone is being nice to her for once. And of course, he immediately dies. It's like, it's super sad. And then seeing like it compared to the way that Betty is interacting with him is, it's like shocking. I have the clip where Gene is trying to make arrangements for, you know, his death. He's got a will written. He's like got a funeral plotted out. And she is not having it, and I have that clip.
I don't understand why you like talking about this when you can see so clearly that it upsets me. Selfish and morbid. I'm your little girl. And I know it must be horrible to be looking at whatever you're looking at, but can't you keep it to yourself?
She's doing the wasp thing, but she's saying all the quiet wasp things out loud.
Like, right.
That this is like the psychology that sort of underpins her. And this feels like the Norwegian family.
Right.
As opposed to Peggy's.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're talking about Norwegians, look at these motherfuckers. Yeah. There is also something like low key relatable about everything that Betty just says. Like, part of me wants to be like, yes, girl, set your boundaries. Because, like, if you've ever had a parent who's, like, been an oversharer or, like, someone who emotionally dumps, there is part of you that just wants to say, like, can't you just, like, live with this pain and not tell me about it? It's like, it's not a nice thing to do. I'm not saying you should do it, but there was part of me that looked at her doing it and going like, yeah, shut up, Gene. We get it. You're finna die. Let me deal with it later. Why you gotta tell me about it?
Mm-hmm.
You guys ever have that feeling?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Ever get mad at your family for talking about death?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Anyways, Gene is...
Yeah, keep your problems to yourself. I don't want to hear about your
exactly.
health issues.
Yeah, I'm still a baby. That's what I say. As a 40-year-old, I say to my mom every time she's talking about the will, I go like, I'm a baby. You can't talk about your, you know, you can't, I don't know what a DNR is. I'm a baby. I will resuscitate you. I will let you live as a vegetable forever if it means you're not dead. Sorry, mama, you're going to be in prison in your own body because it'll make me sad if you're not. Okay? I won't spoon feed. All right, I'm sorry. So Gene is being sweet. He is showing Bobby a bunch of stuff he has in a box. He gives Bobby a knife, and I love that moment as, you know, as watching Dawn look over and going, oh, fuck. This could go bad. And then, of course, nothing bad happens.
He teaches him important knife skills, in fact.
He teaches him how to use a knife. Yeah.
I mean, this whole scene is very like Royal Tannenbaum connects with his grandkids, but I still loved the whole thing because Gene was being nice to him and like showing him cool stuff. And,
right.
Like opening himself up in ways that their parents never do with those kids.
And sort of trusting him, too, in this way where it's like, you know, there's always the risk, right? You know, with the... when you're a parent, you are risk averse. There are things you don't want to do because you're like, well, that could be dangerous. And it's always like the older generation, the grandparents, who are just like, in my day, we all had knives and we pointed it towards each other and we learned, you know, what side to stab and what's, you know. So it's like you see the kind of, he's a little bit more reckless, but he's also teaching like very reasonable skills to.
Does your dad tell you stories about the things that they did when they were like boomer children?
Oh my God.
My dad's stories are so.
They're insane.
Weird. Where they're like, oh yeah, and this older kid tied us together with belts to like a pole, and we were there for however long.
Yes.
Like, what was happening?
Right, yeah. Where's the police?
No one was around. There weren't like bystanders that saw you being tied to a pole.
And also, did that not traumatize you for the rest of your life? Because it's weird that you just brought this up. Yeah. You know, we're at like Tony Roma's, and you're just like, you guys have been tied up to a pole? No, I feel like my dad's stories, I always get them randomly. Like, he'll just randomly.
It's like they were living in Home Alone. Like, they were doing, like, elaborate traps to each other.
And, you know, sometimes I will occasionally have a flash of, like, oh, yeah, I did one time walk along the railroad tracks and then see a house be on fire and be like, someone should do something. Mm. But, like, you know, but my dad's stories are always weirder because they're always just, like, you know, oh yeah, my Uncle Hesh, I watched him die. And I'll just be like, I didn't even know you had an Uncle Hesh, you know, uh-huh. Or the, what do you call it? the burglar, I told you about this, who like... Mm-hmm.
Tell Dave, because it's a good story.
Well,
please, yeah.
One time there was a burglar who broke in. My dad was, you know, a child, was pretending to be asleep, and the burglar opened his eye up just to make sure he was asleep. My dad just brought up that story apropos of nothing one day, and I was just like, that's kind of horrifying. Why would you why would you tell me that? I mean, listen, things happen, but anyways.
I do remember when we were roaming the neighborhood unsupervised one day. I think I was staying with friends that they were in a housing development where like they were building a new development next to this one, like just over like a cinder block wall, and there was like construction equipment out there where they were like building
like man house.
What's that?
Like man house?
Yeah, they were building a man house. No, they were just like they were expanding the development.
Okay, got it.
There was like a bulldozer or some sort of truck out there, and for some reason the workers weren't there, and we just like went and broke all the windows out of the bulldozer or whatever. Like we just
That's crazy.
Did a lot of like vandalism.
Yeah. I mean, listen, you're a little latchkey kid.
Yeah, statute of limitations.
Dave, when you were a child, did you ever do crimes?
I mostly obeyed laws. I'm thinking the first crimes I did, probably, I definitely shoplifted some, but nothing fancy, like coffee out of a convenience store when I was in college. But it was one of those, I saw other people doing it, so I figured I could get away with it and didn't really compute what would happen if I got caught. And then, what was it? I saved $3, so I stopped doing it. No, real boring. I'm sorry. I wish I had a good crime story.
That's $3 extra in your pocket, though.
Yeah, I know.
It was.
Devil's advocate here.
I put it all on Bitcoin.
Exactly. And now you have $3,000. And you should buy more Bitcoin with it.
And more shiny rings.
Yeah, more rings.
Yeah.
So he tries to give Bobby a World War I German helmet filled with dried blood.
And it's a World War II helmet, right? I don't think he's old enough for
World War I. That was a World War I
helmet. It has the spike the pointy, on the top. It's very much the Huns in the
But there wasn't
in
a couple Prussians in World War II that still had the spike helmet? No?
Okay. No. World War II, there is no Prussians. Come on,
okay,
man.
But if he was like 20 in 1918, that would make him... all right. I guess that checks out with the timeline.
It's World War I, of course. Right. Because like Don is, I mean, he fought in Korea, but he's very much, you know, like
his. I guess the World War II generation is Roger's age. So yeah, you're right.
Right. Even that, I'm like, I don't know, maybe. He's looking through the box. He makes a great joke about how
if you're a little kid, like if I'm a little kid and my grandpa's pulling out a Prussian helmet with blood on it, I'm going to think it's the fucking coolest thing in the universe.
100%. And Don's
being kind of a bitch about it, to be honest.
Yeah, he's just like, a person lived in there. And it's like, stop being a bitch, Dad. You sound like a bitch right now.
You sound like a guy who faked his way out of a war.
Yeah, you sound like a deserter, bro. Guards, come collect it. Guards,
victory medal, France. I should have another for beating the clap.
He's cool. So he's the coolest granddad ever. You know, he's getting into it with Don a little bit over the helmet. He's eating ice cream with salt because he says he has a salt tooth. I guess he mentions to Sally that his dead wife used to work in drafting for a little bald man who wasn't a threat. Mm-hmm. And I just love just the extra detail of like, don't worry, I wasn't worried that he was going to fuck her.
I wasn't going to let her work for a hot guy.
Right, exactly. And Sally is just like, yes, anding everything. She's just going with it. And then she says, he says, it smells like oranges, which is like, you know, it is the coughing into a hanky and blood comes out. You know, you're just like, someone smells something weird. That's how we know something bad's about to happen.
Because rarely does someone mention a smell that is not confirmed in fiction and have it not be a...
not be a sign that they
plot to
exactly
somehow.
Yeah, and listen, I'm sure it's a trope based on reality, but it's also, it's a very annoying trope at this point. To me, I put it up with coughing into a hanky and blood coming out. I get it. It's people who can die without smelling. Oh, no, did you smell burning hair? I get it. You finna die.
Yeah, they pulled that in the new King of the Hill, but actually it was fast enough cut to him dying that it actually worked.
Yeah, yeah. If you do a smash cut after that to funeral, then fine. But if you make us wait a scene, it's like, we know what we're waiting for here. What do you think? We're stupid? So Gene is driving, yelling at Bobby, loving up on Sally. Everything's going peachy and it's cute. And then Betty picks up the kids, no word from Gene. And finally, a policeman comes up to Betty and Sally and says that Gene died at the AMP trying to get some peaches for his lovely, lovely granddaughter. And Sally is so sad, and it made me sad. Did you guys, was anyone else, I know I said earlier, yeah, she's good for a child actor, but I think in period, I thought she was just great in these scenes. Am I wrong?
Sure, yeah.
Is it just because I love my daughter?
No, she was great. No, she was affecting.
Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She was good. Affecting.
I also, you know, I get like secondhand
ick.
I like all child acting scenes feel a little abusive to me in some ways.
Well, they are child abuse, but go on.
Yeah. So yeah, that was basically it. Like, she did a great job, but I also find it off-putting in the way all child acting is off-putting.
You also wanted to arrest them.
Yes, yeah.
You're like, wow, this is a really beautiful acting job. Your parents should go to jail. But yeah, so Dawn and Betty William and William's wife are mourning Gene. And William like cracks a little joke and Sally hears the laughter and has this great fight with Betty. And I have that scene.
Why are you laughing?
Sally, sweetheart.
We were laughing, honey.
I heard you laughing. How can you be sitting there like nothing's happening? Like he's not gone. He was here, now he's not here. He's gone forever and nobody even knows that.
Stop it. You're being hysterical. Calm down.
He's dead. He's dead and he's never coming back. Nobody cares that he's really, really, really gone.
Sally, go watch TV.
I thought she did a great job in that scene. Lisp and all.
I love this storyline. I don't know that like the button was best conveyed with her doing like a big Oscars monologue for it personally, but like I do really like the storyline where, you know, this guy is the first one that sort of pays attention to her and treats her like she's an independent human being and not now, just like a character in their postcard.
Yeah, yeah. And now it's like, you know, she's back to, you know, her previous life of being kind of neglected and told to watch TV whenever she has an emotion. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was really affecting. And I do love the fact that they're like, go watch TV. And then she's like learning about the monks setting themselves on fire. She's right. Yeah, like, oh, no, I meant
that's what you get when you stop covering the Pope. Yeah.
Oh no, I meant the Flintstones. Yeah. So yeah, then,
three Freedom Riders were beaten to death Sunday night. Yeah.
Oh, change the channel. Batman's on. So then Dawn wakes up, goes into Gene's room, and puts away his cot, and then old timey military soldier music plays. And that is the episode. Favorite scene, at least favorite scene, or something we didn't cover. Vince?
Sorry, I'm checking my notes. There was like a few. The scene of the Horst Sr. talking about his son, where he says, "We just didn't know what kind of person we were making," was so cold,
so harsh. And yeah. It's funny, he keeps digging in like harder and harder. At first, he's like, you know, you're not sure where he's going in that scene because he says, like, you know, if you don't have a son, you don't know what it's like to watch them, you know, succeed and then realize that, you know, they weren't the ones who were doing the gold mining. And it was just like being jealous of your son having a good life that is wild.
I loved that because you keep thinking he's going to soften it by saying, but you know, but I love my son. But no, he's just being like, well, the thing you have to understand is my son's a piece of shit.
And
he disgusts me.
Yeah, he disgusts me and he is dragging my name through the dirt. And we, of course, have no background as to why that is. So I can only assume that it's he caught him with Patchy at one point. Dave, a favorite scene, a least favorite scene, or something we haven't covered?
Oh, something we haven't covered is tough because my favorite scene I did mention, which is the father-in-law negging Don and refusing to not let Don's son wear the I think it's the Pickles Albert or something. There's a very funny name in that German helmet that's escaping me. Oh, definitely, yeah. The word pickle in it.
I'm
just a sucker for any of those simmering resentment scenes. Yeah, I'm a big old Golden Pond head. Whenever an old man just can't deal with being pushed out of the way, I love that stuff. Mm-hmm. At least. Nothing sucked, man. This is a good one. Because I was thinking of as the Peggy storyline, we all agree, is the weakest, but even every little beat of that, like Joan giving her advice on not to be a huge dork and make young women alienate and not like her. Good stuff. Yeah, good stuff throughout. I'm going to stop talking cuz I'm looking for the weak link, and
you don't have to find it.
I'll say it is. Did we need all, like, could we have cut six words from Kieran and Shipka's dialogue at the end? I guess so. Then it would have been perfect.
Sure.
That might affect my rating of the episode, quite honestly. Yeah.
Once again, it's children who ruined the show.
That's the less of the episode, yeah.
No.
Don't have kids, everybody.
Don't have kids.
Be like Peggy. Give them away.
I know. Just have them and then give them away and then focus on your work. If you can move to Manhattan, you get an extra week of work.
Don't have kids, move to Manhattan, do drugs, take hormones.
Yeah,
I think that's we all agree is happening this episode.
We all love that about this episode, and we love that about Mad Men. If you had to give this episode a letter grade, Vince, what would you give it?
Very tough, you know, straight banger, nothing wrong with it, loved it all, one of the best episodes. Therefore, you know, I'm going to calculate that out to a solid B+.
Wow, you know what, if I had to give this episode a letter grade, and there's so many grades you can give it, A through F, I'm going to give it a B+. Dave Weigel, what would you give this episode if you had to give it a letter grade?
Yeah, I would have started with an A+, but like I was saying, Sally's speech at the end, it's just really six words too long, and that drags it down to a B+ for me.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's unanimous. This is a B+ episode of Mad Men and an A++ episode of Mad Yourself a Man. Dave Weigel, thank you so much for coming on and talking Mad Men with us.
Oh, thank you. I needed a distraction so bad.
Why? What's wrong? What's going on in the world? Yeah. Where can people follow you, Dave?
Most of the stuff I do is in Semaphore, SEMAFOR.com. It's free still. But I write a newsletter called Americana, and I write stories all the time. And I post about them. My name on everything is Dave Weigel. So if you go to Twitter, it's Dave Weigel. Go to Blue Sky, go to Letterboxd, go to Goodreads, even.
Wow.
If you're one of those people.
You got a Goodreads account.
Yeah, but Letterboxd is the place where sometimes I just my head is spinning and I say, you know what, I'm going to do 10 minutes of writing about this movie I saw, and it's going to clear my head, and it does. So I've had people who meet me, and they're like, I hate your work except for Letterboxd. So that's probably the best place to start with me.
Well, check out Dave on all of those social platforms. Dave Weigel, once again, thank you.
You're not one of those Letterbox guys that loves M. Night Shyamalan, are you?
No, there's one of the things I got into. So I am persuadable by Letterbox people and by film people. And there's this new trend to resurrect Albert Pyun, who is this B-movie director who did the shitty Captain America that came out in 1990 that everyone makes fun of. And there's this effort to rehab him. I've been logging some of his movies. They're not good. They're fun because he clearly put his heart into it but had no money. So I'm one of those guys who, once the real film heads have a trend, I'm like, I want it on the trend.
Sure.
Shyamalan, though, it's like that. that's gotten a little bit ridiculous. I saw a lady in the water. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it.
Yeah, one of the worst.
I saw what's the one where both of the Smiths family are in it.
After Earth, I think.
Oh God, yeah, no. How do they do that? How do they excuse this behavior? No. But yeah, I don't Albert Pion, though. Read my latest. I think I'm going to do a take on the Captain America movie because it's like, what if Captain America was not good at his job? Is the premise of that movie?
Well,
I don't think anyone else has tackled since then.
That's. Yeah,
I mean, it feels very. If there was a personification of America, it seems like that would be.
Wow, that's deep. So, check out all of those on his social media. You can go to his letterbox. You can go to his Twitter. You can go to his Blue Sky. All of the links will be available in the show notes. Dave, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. Smoking, drinking, joking, cheating, groping,
squeezing, broken 60s guy. Patreon.com/Rockcast. The $8 tier gets you a shout out. That's right. You got a prep school name and something else, maybe. I don't know. And this week we have four names. Are you excited? You got your name cap on?
I do.
All right, I'm excited too. The first one we have paid $150 Mexican dollars.
Ooh, I love a Mexican dollar.
Yeah, which
it's like a dollar but spicier.
Yes, and it's so that's the eight American dollars. So that's the $8 tier. And this is his name is Patricio Villalpando.
Villalpando, oh, it's me, a panda.
Maybe we don't do that. I guess we. Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah,
I'm gonna call this guy.
We love you.
We call this guy Sancho Panda.
A Sancho Panda.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
He's like a panda. You know, you get it.
Yeah. Let's see. Panda. No, fuck, man. I can
don't cry. Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, pandas don't cry. Here's a question I have about that song. It rhymes in English. I, right? And then it's sing don't cry.
Mm-hmm.
But in Spanish, that doesn't rhyme.
I think less of their songs rhyme because everything rhymes. It's too easy to rhyme. I don't know. I'm just spitballing.
That's someone find the answer to that. Let me know. Okay. Second name is, and this is I don't know how to do this one. P. Domansky.
Domansky.
Domansky, maybe. Yeah.
Domansky. The man skis.
A man, a plan.
Domansky. Man, pan, panda bear.
Villa Pando.
We're going to call this guy. Is there a famous Polish skier?
Well, yeah, I'm going to know a famous Polish skier. I don't know. Louis C.K., but skiing.
Super G.
Super G. Okay.
That's a ski race.
Okay, good.
You know what? Doesn't have to.
Look at the sky. It's a bird? It's a plane? No, it's a Polish skier named Super G. All right, two more names. Steven Silver.
Steven Silver. Ooh, this guy's very sibilant. We're going to call this guy Snake.
Ooh, hey, it's me, Snake, and I'm here to slither through your bloody stomach. All right.
I don't know. My stomach slutty.
I don't know.
I guess you let snakes in.
I was doing a lisp, but I was trying to do a sibilant S, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Okay, and last but definitely not least, David Doctor.
Oh, the good doctor. I mean, there's so many different things that you can do with Doctor,
yeah.
But he's probably got too many doctor names. We're going to call this guy Nurse.
Ooh.
The Nurse Shark.
Okay, David Doctor, the Nurse Shark. Please. My father is Dr. Nurse. Call me David Doctor Shark. Well, that's it. That is all the names we have for this week.
If you pay enough money, you can listen to us have a stroke.
Yes, exactly. So if you would like to hear your name and get a prep school name, go to patreon.com/frockcast. $8 or more gets you a shout out. Fraudcast@gmail.com for all your questions, comments, and concerns. Vince, what is the Google Voice number?
415-275-0030.
All right, everyone. Thanks again so much for listening. And until next time, I don't think about you at not at all. They say that Sal's wife bought some new lingerie.
But Sal's gay.
They say she got dolled up and did her hair. But when she's trying to touch his meat, he does end Margaret's choreography. And Kitty wakes right up, and now she's scared.
That sounds gay.
They say it's time to move into the city. Different Drifter song, right? It doesn't matter. Either way. My dick is long. This is the song. I had sex with Vince Messini's mom. And I won't quit writing lyrics for this song. Yeah, going off top, bitch. Mom and I'm making him brother. That means I'm his father. And together we're gonna have Thanksgiving dinner. And I'll be like, hey, here's your new brother. What are you gonna do now? I'm at the head of the table, bitch. You gotta serve me first, cause I'm your dad. And also, your brother's more important than you now. And then he'll be so mad, and I will have won. Yeah.
Haven't they actually tried to make High Lai a thing a few times, like in America, like in real life? Like, I feel like
this probably is how it happens. Is just like a rich guys think this is cool, we'll catch on. I mean, it looks boring. Pickleball looks boring. Look at that.
Yeah,
I get it. I get it. How somebody thinks I'll be the guy to do this. I did like in the pitch meeting. It feels like Harry is willing to take on his stupid idea of advertising on every channel at once so that they're wasting three of the ad buys.
Yeah, well, he's like, oh, most of this money could go to TV and then I can be even more powerful in this company.
Yeah, that was that. I would have taken it. I was looking at that and thought, you get the impression they're sort of, they don't want to be super embarrassed by having this account.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, because I had that sort of feeling like, why is Don so against it? And he seems like the only one that's against it.
Mm-hmm. And everyone's being very genteel in how they discuss their embarrassment, except for the very rape conscious mother. She's the only one who can who speaks the truth this whole episode directly.
Yeah.
I'm back. What'd I miss?
Oh, we were just looking up things about High Lai.
So I didn't miss nothing.
If you thought goldenly breaded McDonald's chicken couldn't get more golden, think golder. Because new sweet and smoky special edition gold sauce is here. Made for your chicken favorites. At participating McDonald's for a limited time.